adrift in a foreign land, singing on issues both humble and grand. A decade flew past her, and there on the page, she read that the prince had returned to the stage. Hovering near treacherous water, a friend saw her drifting and caught her. Unguarded fantasies flying too far, memories tumbling like sweets from a jar. And take me down to the harbor now, grapes of the summer are low on the bough. Ghosts of my history will follow me there, and the winds of the old days will blow through my hair. On an undying ember, it doesn't take much to remember those eloquent songs from the good old days that set us to marching with banners ablaze. But reporters, there's no sense in prying. Our blue-eyed son's been denying the truths that are wrapped in a mystery. '60s are over, so set him free. Take me down to the harbor now. Grapes of the summer are low on the bough. Ghosts of my history will follow me there, and the winds of the old days will blow through my.
When Joan Baez joined Bob Dylan on stage for the tour of the Rolling Thunder Review, it reminded some of their fans of the crusading days of the 60s. But there had obviously been some changes, not only musically, but the kind of changes that come with the passing of time, a mellowing, a kind of newfound sense of humor. Baez and Dylan are also together on the cover of the latest issue of Rolling Stone magazine for a story by critic Nat Hentoff. This is Bryn Bridenthal for the Rolling Stone News Service. I spoke with Joan at her home near San Francisco shortly after she'd returned from the Dylan tour. She described herself as actually being four people, a mother, a woman, a musician, and a politician. And at the time, it was the mother that obviously had top priority.
Yeah, I think it was hard enough being three, you know, until Gabe came along. And the woman I would include just the things that I want to do. I mean, if I want to have an affair, or if I want to fix up the house, or if I want to putter in the garden, or, you know, like, also in woman is if I like to have a bunch of people to dinner. I love to cook, you know, and that just is very far removed from a very political kind of life where, you know, you don't have time for those things. But woman in the romantic sense for me is, and a lot of the songs I've written are about, you know, loves I've had in the past and that, and I consider that. There's a very romantic side to saying that woman is one of the four people that I am. And the mother is the obvious one. I mean, it's why I wasn't awake when you got here today, because coming back off of a tour like the one I was on and becoming mother again is very difficult to do, because all of a sudden there aren't 10,000 people clapping. There's one kid asking for his breakfast at 7 o'clock in the morning. And the political one has never been conventional politics, as far as I can imagine. It never will be unless I change, but I've pretty much been this way since I was about 10, and it's pretty much a real passion for me. And it's always taken precedence over music, which is the fourth category. And people have never understood that, and a lot of people have resented it. You know, she's a singer, why doesn't she shut up and sing? That's what she does best. But I think I felt the pressures of a crumbling world around me too strongly to just take off and have a marvelous time singing. I've always enjoyed it. I've loved the concerts, but they've always been really intermingled. Usually I'm just wrapped up in some cause, and I'm talking about it between every third song, and I decided that I had to stop that for a while.
How do you think you'd describe the ways that you have changed since the 60s?
I think that with Gabriel, having Gabriel was one of the biggest changes. Almost being killed in Hanoi was another big change. I mean, I think with Gabriel, I mellowed a lot, and a lot of I can hear some of my strident lectures at people saying, you know, when the shit hits the fan, you must be here and you must be there and you must be doing that, and much more dogma than I spout now. And some, I remember once a woman saying, well, what if you have kids and you can't go to jail? And I said, you can go to jail when you have children, somebody will take care of them. And then I thought, now how carefully I try to handle Gabe at this age, you know, so he doesn't get all screwed up because I'm in the cause.
What will your new album be like?
The new album is two records. It's from the last tour. We taped six concerts on the summer tour. So one full record is of me and the band and the lighter stuff, and it's very pretty. I love it. It's got Please Come to Boston and Boulder to Birmingham and Oh Happy Day, a bunch of things, all with the band. And the other album of the two set is the acoustic.
And this is supposed to be out in January, right?
It won't make it in January.
Something else that comes through after reading Nat Hentoff's piece is that you seem to be a lot less serious. You seem to be constantly clowning on stage and intent on having a good time and making everybody laugh.
Oh, I've always been this way, secretly, whatever you want to call it. I mean, I've always been known as a clown and known as somebody who could make people laugh, but I never did it in public. That's all. And then, by the end of this tour, which was so wacky to begin with, you know, there were no holes barred. I mean, I put a yellow wig on, went running on the stage, and pretended I was a groupie. Nobody but about five people in the outfit knew that it was me. And I had a plan, security would come and drag me off. I stood up there with a cigarette in my mouth, bright red, and a blonde wig down covering the tops of my eyes. And I was chewing gum and doing a terrible dance with my legs, you know, with I'd cut offs on and silver shoes, and inching towards the microphone. And I saw these faces. My God, you know, this groupie broke through. And I just got up to the microphone where Jack Elliott was, and I said, you know, hi, and I started to sing. And then the security guy came, and it was all planned, and he carried me off, and I was kicking and screaming, I want to meet Bob Dylan, it was the last thing I'd do in my life. And nobody would ever have dreamed, I mean, nobody knew who that was, and things like that. And I didn't allow myself, you know, before.
How did you feel when you got the call from Dylan to join this Rolling Thunder Review Tour?
Well, at that time, I had no idea what it was going to be like. I was absolutely flattered that he called. I hadn't talked to him, you know, in so long, or really thought about singing with him.
Since you were the first major performer to actually bring Dylan before the mass audiences, can you describe how it felt to be back on stage with him and compare the music and audiences on this tour to, if I may, the old days?
Well, this is very funny. I mean, I don't know whether that's what Nat wrote or not, but we pulled out letters, furious letters from 1965. We paid $2.95 to hear Joan Baez, who was this scummy character she brought on the stage with her, you know, and his squawky little voice, because you couldn't hear the words. And I was furious with the audience, and I was determined that they hear him, because I, you know, as far as I was concerned, he was it, you know, and as far as I'm concerned, in a sense, he still is with the writing. He's always been one of the funniest people I've ever known. He probably is just more subdued on stage even than I ever was with that. But yeah, I mean, some nights he was very funny. And he dedicates songs to people who are either dead, or he knew words in the audience, and he'd say, oh, so-and-so back there, and he'd look out past the lights, and everybody'd clap and look around for this person who wasn't there, you know, at all.
Oh, I also understand at one point that Dylan admonished you not to upstage him. And you were pulling all these, you did a Charleston one time. Is that
did you see, that's a joke. No, I mean, he didn't say anything that night. And I came off and I was teasing, and I said to somebody, well, I guess that's the last time we do Mama, You've Been on Your Mind. And sure enough, we didn't do it for quite a while. But one night he said, but he was joking. He said, hey, don't upstage me. And I said, hey, Bob, I'll do my best. You know? And people tend to forget the level of humor that he has and take everything he says, you know, as deadly serious. And I mean, Scarlett, the violinist, one night was in hell for about 48 hours because he forgot to introduce her, and he gave her a terrible look when she made a squeaky note. And she thought that was it, you know, for her career and all the rest of it.
Why do I sit the autumnal judge? Years of self-righteousness will not budge. Singer, savior, it was his to choose. Which of us knows what was his to lose? It's
another Rolling Stone reporter who talks about the night that the Review went to play for Hurricane Carter in Clinton. He says that you were the only one who seemed to be really comfortable in that situation, and that everybody else felt a little awkward, and some of the people even had trouble relating to the audience.
Bob, of course, did okay, because whether they are interested in white people or whether they could hear the voice or not, he mesmerizes people, okay, so that was okay. I've been in jail, and I knew what the audience was going to be like as soon as I heard the level of the jail, and the population was 95% black, even maybe higher, that I knew that they weren't going to listen to the Rolling Thunder Review. But it doesn't matter. I knew they'd have a marvelous time. So I tried to explain to people, and people just absolutely didn't understand. And Bobby said, well, what do you think I should do? And I said, just do your hardest rock. And so I talked sort of semi-jail language, and it's made some wisecrack to them. I said, I want to thank the authorities for letting us in. I wish they'd make it as easy for you to get out. Yeah! You know, so that was the first response that they really had. And then I did just black songs. I mean, they did Do Right Woman, because it was mostly mostly women's prison. And I said, I like to sing a song dedicated to the women inmates. I said, because in spite of appearances here, I gather most of you are women. Because about a third of them were, you know, women in drag, and they looked like men. So it looked as though you had a completely mixed audience, half men, half women, and almost all of them were women. And for our Rolling Thunder people, who were, you know, had never been inside a jail, to see some stud walk past, you know, snapping his fingers with a cocked hat on and an afro and sail into the ladies' room, it was kind of a shock. But I understood it, because I'd been there before.
Something else I learned in that story that I was really shocked by, and that is that was the first time you'd met Sarah Dillon.
I'd met her before, but she and I became, I think by now I can say, close friends, you know, after that short period of time. She was the one person, when you look back on experience like that and you think, well, who would I really want to get back in touch with? It's Sarah. And so we've been in touch, you know, and we had a lot of years to cover talking, a lot of years that we'd been busy hating each other and never known each other.
Hentoff also talks about, he seems to be kind of amazed by the fact that you were always right there listening to what was going on, especially to Dylan. I mean, you didn't miss a single song, and your whole attention seemed to just be riveted on that. And he seemed surprised that after all these years and all these performances, that it still held your attention so closely. Why do you think that is?
I'm not sure, except the word Bobby's never been keen on, but the genius of that, of whatever the power he has, or strength, and a funny kind of inverse stage presence. I mean, he absolutely ignores the audience in a sense. On the other hand, he does rivet you. You know, but for me, you know, listen, I didn't want to miss Hurricane at night. You know, it was this great, incredible song. I didn't want to miss Sarah, especially with getting to know Sarah and all that. And I didn't want to miss his acoustic songs. I mean, that was the best of all when he did that and played the harmonica. And I don't know, it was just very, very special. And I guess I was saying to Nat, that power must have had something to do with why the tour stayed together and considered ourselves a family. Everybody was listening. Every member of the crew wanted to be able to get a seat behind some amp somewhere to be able to hear that last part of the show.
That's Joan Baez, who along with Bob Dylan is on the cover of the latest Rolling Stone magazine.